Richard Carlson is a stress management consultant and teacher in the field of personal development. His books include You Can Feel Good Again and Shortcut Through Therapy. Richard Carlson co-edited Handbook for the Soul.
Soul Intention by Richard Carlson, PhD. One of the most thought-provoking questions I've ever heard was asked by Stephen Levine. He asks, if you had 1 hour to live and could make only one call, who would it be to, what would you say, and why are you waiting? A similar question could be asked of our relationship to the soul. Why wait a moment longer to connect with and nourish the soul? Our connectedness to our soul is critical to our ability to feel peace and love, to act in kindness towards others, and to feel a sense of gratitude and wonder for life. To nourish the soul means to attend to and care for the parts of ourselves that make us happy, and that enable us to become kinder, gentler, more compassionate, and loving. As we get into the habit of nourishing the soul, we move to an entirely different level of life. Many of the external aspects of life that were so important and meaningful will seem insignificant, even silly. Everyday ordinary life will take on a new meaning and richness as we begin to sense the divine in the ordinary. Our ordinary lives will become quite extraordinary. Our need to be special and different will diminish, and we will be more easily satisfied. We'll be happier. Where we choose to place our primary attention has a great deal to do with our ability to open ourselves to the soul's nourishment. Is my attention on my external life? What my body looks like, whether or not I'm achieving my goals, what others think of me, how much money I'm making, how I stack up against others, whether or not I'm stylishly slim, and so forth. Or is my attention on my inner world, the world of the soul? I have often been tempted to focus on my personal ambitions and goals. Over the years, however, I've noticed that when my attention is on these outer or external aspects of my life, it matters not how well things are going, because deep down, inside my being, there is an emptiness. No matter how much money I make or how great my body looks, I still feel a sense of shallowness. When I remember that the primary purpose of life is to feel and appreciate the presence of God, to live from a state of love and compassion, and to be of service to others, then instantly, like magic, I begin to feel at peace. And just as magically, when I transfer my energy from my external circumstances to my inner knowing, to my soul energy, my external circumstances usually work out terrifically. In fact, as I work with clients, parent my children, grow with my wife, write a book, wash dishes, or attempt to solve a problem from a place of peace and wisdom rather than from one of fear and reaction, my life seems easier, quieter, and more satisfying. There is something in life more important, more beautiful, and more satisfying than what we think is important. That something is an internal place beyond thought, beyond form. Our thoughts about what we want, what we wish were different, and where we would rather be will come and go. But behind these thoughts, before their very formation, a deeper level of life is waiting for our attention. This is the realm of the soul. The soul is the part of us that watches our thoughts come and go. It is not the thoughts themselves. For most of us, certainly for me, thoughts are extremely compelling, as the thought, I'm really mad at her, enters the mind. We're tempted to latch onto it, pay attention to it, see where it goes, give it significance. In short, we're tempted to take the thought far too seriously. As we do so, thousands of times every day we feel anything but nourished by the soul. Instead, we feel angry, jealous, hurt, or frightened, depending on the content of our thoughts. We think, we feel, then we think some more. We want to believe that if we could just think through our dissatisfactions or analyze our problems, we would somehow feel better. But that never works, because nourishment for the soul comes not from the intellect, but from the heart. We can't think our way to happiness. Instead, we must open ourselves to our true nature, which is happiness. Behind thoughts such as, I'm really mad at her, lies a spaciousness, a constant hum of quietness and self-confidence, a feeling of nourishment that comes from the soul. If our thoughts come and go, if indeed we let them go, we will discover this source of quiet and peace within ourselves. If we treat our thoughts as what they really are, simply thoughts, instead of believing that they are all that there is, then we can give them less significance. When a disturbing thought enters the mind, as so often happens, rather than panicking and reacting, we can say to ourselves, "Ah, there's another one," and then let it go. When we trust in the soul, when we know that there is something else, something deeper and more important than the content of our own thoughts, it becomes possible to step back, relax, and become the observer of those thoughts. A simple Zen statement reminds us that spring comes and the grass grows all by itself. In other words, less effort is sometimes better. This is true with respect to observing our thoughts and our connection with the soul. The less significance we give our thoughts, the easier it will be to connect with the deeper parts of ourselves. This isn't to say that what we think about isn't important, just that it isn't everything there is. If we overanalyze our thoughts and become overly concerned with them, we find ourselves caught up in our thinking, struggling to find answers, trapped in what I call analysis paralysis. But as we simply let go, noticing our thoughts and allowing our wisdom to surface, we will find a new sense of ease and comfort. Life will seem less like an emergency. It always helps me to remember that I am the thinker of my own thoughts. Thinking isn't something that happens to me, as it often seems to be. Rather, thinking is something that I am doing on a moment-to-moment basis. I wouldn't become insulted by reading a nasty letter I'd written to myself. Neither should I allow my own thoughts to upset me. I can think my thoughts without becoming overly concerned with their content, without overreacting with a thought attack. I know that as I quiet my thinking and connect with my soul, my love and wisdom will surface and my fear will fade away. For as long as I can remember, I have heard that you must turn inward to discover happiness and peace, to feel nourished. It wasn't until fairly recently, however, that I actually trusted that this would work. Although I don't always walk the walk as well as I would like, I have come to see that my inner life, my connection to my soul, meaningfully affects what happens in my life. If I'm feeling angry and frustrated, every aspect of my life seems overwhelming and stressful. When I am feeling fearful, I attract fear. But when I'm feeling contented and peaceful, my life seems to flow. Everything falls into place and makes sense as if it all has a purpose. In a sense, our lives are like automobiles, meant to be driven from inside. I find that practicing the art of love in my day-to-day life is among the most helpful ways for me to feel nourished by my soul. Everything begins with an intention. Although it isn't always easy, I find that when I set my intention on feeling love, I often get exactly that feeling. And when I do, I connect with that place inside myself where peace exists. Every day, I find many opportunities to practice love. At work, with my wife and daughters, through an unfulfilled dream, with a stranger who's acting in a way that I don't care for, even with a problem or disappointment. An excellent way to practice love is to set your intention on seeing beyond someone's behavior or personality. Try to realize that beneath the surface insecurity, negative thinking, and poor behavior, everyone is connected to God. Just as you wouldn't get angry at someone simply because he or she is in a wheelchair, you need not be angry because a person hasn't yet opened his heart to the nourishment of his soul. When people act in unloving ways, it only means that they are out of touch with their souls and aren't feeling spiritually nourished. When that happens, there's no need to panic. The best we can do for ourselves is to nourish our own souls by looking beyond the behavior we don't care for, thus practicing the art of love. We may have more than an hour to live, but why wait a moment longer to connect with our souls and begin practicing love?
author of Men Are From Mars, Women Are From Venus, and What Your Mother Didn't Tell You and Your Father Didn't Know, John Gray is an expert in the fields of communication, relationships, and personal growth.
Love Vitamins for Your Soul by John Gray, PhD. Each day you are faced with opportunities to help others, to forgive them, to have compassion for them, to be tolerant of them. Do you seize these opportunities or do you let them slip by? Though seemingly inconsequential, these everyday decisions have a direct impact on the state of your soul. For you nurture your soul by giving of yourself to others in a loving way. And each time you choose to help others, your soul grows and flourishes. We all have many God-given gifts. The challenge with which we are each faced is to discover these gifts and then make full use of them by serving others. That's how our soul grows, in the highest sense. The soul stretches itself and fulfills its purpose. But though our soul thrives when we give of ourselves, we must realize that we cannot give love unless we can receive love. Our ability to receive love is based on our ability to feel, because it is through our feelings that we are able to receive support and then be motivated to give support. In order to give of ourselves, we must nurture ourselves. One of the ways we receive this nurturing is through having a good relationship. This gives us the opportunity to serve our partner. And serving others is intrinsic in nurturing our own souls. Men and women receive love differently. This is because men and women are basically different and do not approach life in the same way. Because most of us do not understand these differences, we rarely get what we need from the opposite sex. Let me give you an example. Men are often described as being unfeeling or out of touch with their feelings, and therefore in need of massive doses of therapy to get in touch with their feelings. But if you go to a football game, you will find men who are very much in touch with their feelings. They are very alive and enthusiastic. Whenever a man does anything, there is feeling behind it, a feeling that motivated him to take action. The primary way to love a man and help him get in touch with his feelings is to appreciate him for what he does. To nurture a man's soul, you must repeatedly send him the message that he makes a difference, that his actions are worthwhile. You must also let him know that when his actions are mistakes, they are forgivable. You must assure him that he is accepted just the way he is. If you try to correct him or tell him what to do, he will only resist. And if he does not resist, he will weaken. He will lose touch with the inner guidance within him that needs to be in control of his actions. Women often need to feel in control of their feelings. The way to nurture a woman's soul is to give her the support she needs to freely express herself, to talk about her feelings, her wants, her wishes. You must not attempt to correct her feelings or talk her out of her feelings. If she is feeling bad or afraid or angry, do not be critical of that. This is a huge task, but it is of immense importance. Once we have learned how to nurture our partners, we can then go out and make a difference in the world. Parents, for example, can begin by making a difference for their children. As their children grow, the parents can move beyond family to community, then outside the community to the world at large. This process of giving unconditional love nurtures us and fulfills our purpose in life. When you are able to give of yourself without expecting anything in return, you become a bigger person. Just as unconditional love is one of the manifestations of soul growth, there are other attributes as well: forgiveness, courage, patience, faith, compassion, generosity, wisdom. An evolved soul requires all of these qualities in proper balance. Let me give you a personal example. I believe that to nurture my soul and to fulfill my soul's purpose, I must learn from every event in my life. I must come to realize that every experience has within it a seed of a tremendous gift, a soul gift, some new strength. When I feel betrayed by someone, instead of sulking, clinging to my resentment and playing the role of a victim, I am challenged to strengthen my soul through forgiveness. By forgiving the person who hurt me, I strengthen my soul. So you can see that forgiveness is one of the attributes of soul growth. And each time we are called upon to forgive, we nourish our souls and learn more about who we are and what we have to share in this world. This is also an example of unconditional love. Sometimes life frightens me and I am tempted to retreat instead of risking failure. But when I challenge this fear and choose to take a risk, this stretches my soul. By forging ahead and trying something new, even when I'm scared, I perform an act of courage. And this act of courage strengthens my soul and strengthens my character. So you can see that forgiveness and courage are two intrinsic virtues of the soul. But there are more. Patience is one. Within our hearts, each of us has dreams like seeds waiting to sprout and grow into beautiful flowers. We are anxious for all of these dreams to come about. We long for something we can't have at this moment. In order to nurture your soul, you need to realize this and accept the fact that all things come in time. You must learn to be patient and yet to persist. Faith is another quality of the soul. All of us are confused and ambivalent at times. We don't know the answer to a problem or are faced with conflicting answers. Instead of giving up, instead of drowning in doubt, soul growth requires that we forge ahead, that we continue to ask questions and to look for answers, all the while having faith that everything is unfolding in the right manner. I draw upon all of these qualities of my soul during times of trial and tribulation, during times of suffering. I dig deep within myself to draw out the best of myself, and miraculously the suffering goes away. Because forgiveness takes away suffering, patience and tolerance take away suffering, faith takes away suffering. All adversity is really an opportunity for our souls to grow. All adversity is really a form of growing pains. Compassion is another virtue capable of neutralizing suffering. Compassion also motivates us to give service in this world. When we experience the pain of another person, we instinctively want to take away that pain. But by taking away the other person's pain, we also take away his or her opportunity to grow. To be truly compassionate, we must be able to share another person's suffering and pain, knowing there is nothing we can do to relieve it, and that we're not responsible for it, and yet knowing and understanding what that pain feels like. Generosity is another virtue of the soul, and it goes hand in hand with compassion. If you have no compassion, you cannot have generosity. Let me give you an example. Think of the many poor and homeless people in our country. People who are lacking in compassion cope with the sight of a poor person by eliminating that person from their awareness. They ignore the situation because they can't deal with it. They look the other way, instead of extending their understanding and generosity. However, if these same people had compassion, the compassion would motivate them to act in a generous manner. Generosity manifests itself when we are motivated by compassion. Sometimes little can be done, but we do what we can. And this is an example of how compassion brings out another attribute of the soul, wisdom. Too often, when people start to feel compassion for another human being, they also feel compelled to change the other person, rather than simply empathizing in a compassionate manner. They want to offer advice. A truly wise person will have the wisdom to know what he can do, accept what he can't do, and have the generosity of spirit to extend himself in ways that can make a difference. Each of these attributes leads to the other, almost like the rungs of a ladder. Each is an expression of the soul. What is critical to realize is how interrelated all of these virtues are and how they should be balanced. Consider a woman who is full of compassion yet meddles too much in other people's lives. She takes too much responsibility for them instead of helping them in a way that helps them help themselves. She has compassion, but she lacks wisdom. When you choose to give to others, your generosity must be unconditional. Consider the case of the generous person who gives too much and later resents it because he feels unappreciated. Serving others can be very difficult, especially if we feel unfulfilled as individuals, if we have little support in our lives, or if we have not taken care of ourselves. You have to give to yourself first. Then you can mature into the highest level of soul growth, which is service to others. A relationship with God or a higher power is vital to nurturing and tending one's soul. Without it, you will encounter a variety of troubles. You'll expect your partner to be perfect because you don't have a relationship with perfection. Or you will expect your partner to be your higher power. This is a big mistake. In order to nurture our souls, we must also come to understand what I call love vitamins. These are basically different types of love that we require for spiritual health. We must realize that we all need a balanced combination of love vitamins. If you expect to receive all of your love from your partner, for instance, it will never be enough. You need a balance. Vitamin S is love of self. Vitamin O stands for love received from the opposite sex. Vitamin F is love from friends and family. Vitamin P is love from parents. If one of your relationships isn't working, it could be that you're deficient in another love vitamin. For example, let's say you have unresolved issues with your mother or father. Did you realize that these neglected issues could block your partner from providing you with love and support? If you felt ignored as a child and your partner ignores you a bit, you'll probably overreact and blow the situation out of proportion when, in reality, he or she was just preoccupied. See? You tend to project onto your relationship with your partner the unresolved issues in other aspects of your being. Your relationship with your parents, your family, your friends, yourself, your buddies, and your peers. A need for a relationship with God is the critically important vitamin G. This is actually broken down into vitamin G1, which is our most immature relationship with God, our most dependent relationship, and vitamin G2, which is our most mature state when we are serving God. Vitamin G1 is the basis of vitamin G2. But neither is superior. Neither is better than the other. In our first most immature relationship with God, we perceive God as the big parent in the sky, the omnipresent, omnipotent flock of angels that supports us. Based on this relationship, we grow and come to know ourselves and our abilities. We begin to use the support we have received in our life to serve. And as we serve our children, as we serve society, as we serve the world, as we serve our soul, we gradually discover ourselves to be pure instruments in the service of God.
Harold Kushner is Rabbi Laureate of Temple Israel in Natick, Massachusetts, and author of When Bad Things Happen to Good People, When All You Ever Wanted Isn't Enough, and To Life.
God's Fingerprints on the Soul by Rabbi Harold Kushner. Everything that God created is potentially holy. And our task as humans is to find that holiness in seemingly unholy situations. When we can do this, we will have learned to nurture our souls. Think about it. It's easy to see God's beauty in a glorious sunset or in ocean waves crashing on the beach. But can you find the holiness in a struggle for life? I recently had a conversation with a woman whose daughter is suffering from kidney failure. The girl has had 3 transplants. All were rejected. She's on regular dialysis. Yet, is this a tear-jerking story of despair? On the contrary. What the woman tells me is how brave and strong her daughter has been throughout her ordeal, and how in awe she is of her own child's ability to cope and still remain cheerful and full of life. My friend has found the holiness in her daughter's situation. We must remember that everything in this world has God's fingerprints on it, and that alone makes it special. Our inability to see beauty doesn't suggest in the slightest that beauty is not there. Rather, it suggests that we are not looking carefully enough or with broad enough perspective to see the beauty. Can you see the holiness in those things you take for granted? A paved road? A washing machine? If you concentrate on finding what's good in every situation, you will discover that your life will suddenly be filled with gratitude, a feeling that nurtures the soul. With practice, you'll be able to see the holiness in areas not usually associated with holiness. You will be able to see the beauty in the circle of life. Even when someone you love is sick or dying, you will begin to sense the holiness in the everyday problems that force you to grow and develop. When your life is filled with the desire to see the holiness in everyday life, something magical happens. Ordinary life becomes extraordinary, and the very process of life begins to nourish your soul. With each new circumstance that comes your way, another opportunity presents itself to nourish your soul. As long as you can find even a kernel of holiness in this situation, your soul will grow and feel cared for. In my book, To Life, I define the Jewish religion as the science of taking the ordinary and making it holy. The idea is to try to find some bit of holiness in everything: food, sex, earning, and spending money, having children, conversations with friends. If we are rooted in a belief that everything that God created is potentially holy, we have the capacity to notice that which is beautiful and holy in everyday life. Everything can be seen as a miracle, part of God's plan. And when we can truly see this, we nourish our souls. Nourishing your soul can be compared to eating or nourishing your body. Sometimes you pause during a meal and truly savor the food. You realize how really wonderful the food is. You appreciate it and count your blessings. Other times you simply shovel the food into your mouth while you're watching the news or reading the paper, unaware of the fact that you're nourishing your body. The same is true of spiritual nourishment. Sometimes we're simply blown away and in awe by finding ourselves in the presence of God. Other times, however, even when we are participating in acts of kindness, complimenting others, writing a check to charity, donating time to a good cause, we are oblivious to the miracle of what is happening at that moment. But this is okay, too. In fact, there is something innately wonderful about doing nice, warm-hearted things for others, even when we are not spiritually awake, when the momentum of what we have done in more awake moments carries us through. You will notice that when you carry out acts of kindness, when you pray, study, give to charity, or forgive someone who may have hurt you, you get a wonderful feeling inside. It's as though something inside your body responds and says, "Yes, this is how I ought to feel." I've often said that the feeling you get from a simple act of goodwill can be compared to the rush of endorphins you get from an hour-long workout at the gym. Why do we get this wonderful feeling? What is its purpose? I believe that each of us was put on this earth to fulfill his or her potential for humanity, and the soul is that part of us that makes us truly human. The soul is what makes a human being, and not simply another living creature on God's earth. The soul is not a physical entity, but instead refers to everything about us that is not physical: our values, memories, identity, sense of humor. Since the soul represents the parts of the human being that are not physical, it cannot get sick, it cannot die, it cannot disappear. In short, the soul is immortal. You nourish your soul by fulfilling your destiny, by developing the potential that the soul represents. When you fulfill your soul's destiny, you will feel right. Conversely, when you ignore your soul's destiny, when you get caught up in your own self-interests and forget to care for others, you will not feel right. Instead, you will feel empty and unfulfilled. During these times, you are neglecting your soul. You are depriving it of nourishment. When I talk to people who feel this emptiness and lack of fulfillment, I recommend that they find a source of balance in their lives. I suggest that they find some way to give back to the world in order to feel a sense of completeness. If, for example, you are very busy with your career, try not only to find the holiness within your work, but also seek something outside your 9-to-5 job as an additional source of fulfillment and as a way to feel the joy of helping others. You can do any number of things to fulfill this goal. Volunteer at your community hotline, coach a little league team, donate your time to a public school, visit the sick. Whatever you choose, you will gain a sense that you are giving of yourself, that you are sharing yourself with the world, that you are fulfilling the destiny of your soul. Let's look at the case of a typical middle-aged man who is in the midst of a midlife crisis. He feels that he's going nowhere with his career, and he's filled with despair. Buying a faster car or dating a younger woman won't erase this despair. Instead, he needs to reach beyond the competitiveness of the business world to spend time connecting with people rather than seeing them as rivals. This added dimension in his life is often the single change that is needed for him to feel that sense of soul nourishment. Too often people make the mistake of believing that if they only had more money or more sex or a different partner or a better-looking body, they would feel the sense of wholeness they've always craved. Virtually without exception, this is not the case. What is actually lacking is the dimension of giving and kindness as a means of nourishing the soul. To add this dimension to your life is to nourish your soul. The soul craves two distinct types of nourishment, public and private. Each person requires a different balance between the two types of nourishment. I tend to be a very public person. I feel that I nourish my soul and grow as a human being through my contacts with others. I have found that, for me, congressional prayer is usually a much richer spiritual experience than private prayer. I like to feel I'm part of a team I need contact with and feedback from other people. On the other hand, I know very spiritual people who nourish their souls in a much more private manner. They tend to their souls through meditation, contemplation, study, and self-improvement. I believe that everyone needs a little bit of both types of nourishment, but the balance will vary from person to person. Virtually all individuals have the potential to grow spiritually and nourish their souls on a day-to-day basis. There is hope and great possibility even for those who are severely disadvantaged. When a retarded child is born, the religious question we often ask is, why does God let this happen? But the better question to pose is to ask, what kind of a community should we be so that mental retardation isn't a barrier to the enjoyment of one's full humanity? One of the messages I share, time and time again, is a verse in chapter 40 of Isaiah. Those that return to the Lord will have their strength renewed. When you are despairing, when you are confronted with a situation you fear will overwhelm you, don't ask God to take away the problem, but instead pray that He gives you the strength to deal with it. For me, the proof of the existence of God is that I am constantly witnessing ordinary people doing extraordinary things and coming up with strengths that they never knew they had. A perfect example is the sick daughter I mentioned earlier, who is still full of life and courage despite her ordeals. My own son was able to do the same thing at the end of his life. These are examples of God's intervention. He doesn't take away the problem, but rather gives us the resources to cope with it. In one of my books, I said, religion can't change the facts, but it can change the way you relate to facts. One distinction that I like to make, originally made by Martin Buber, is on the difference between theology and religion. Buber defines theology as talking about God, and religion as experiencing God. I believe that what we need in American spiritual life today is less theology and more religion. Less concern about belief in God, the nature of God, the existence of God, and more opportunities to find moments in our lives when we feel that we have just met God. We meet God when we pray, when we are helpful and kind, when we overcome nasty habits, addictions, and pettiness in our lives. Ultimately, I see spiritual growth as climbing a ladder. You climb slowly, step by step. With each step you take, you solidify your footing, then move on to the next step. Each step you take up the ladder nourishes your soul. In time, you will feel completely nourished and connected to God. You will have truly met God.
Betty Eady's extraordinary near-death experience was chronicled in her best-selling book, Embraced by the Light.
The Divine Spirit by Betty J. Eady. In each of us is a sheltered place from which our spirit stems. Our spirit is the pure part of us. When we are born to this earth, we often lose contact with that spiritual part, the divine self. When we lose the awareness of our divinity, we become disconnected and depressed. To feel whole, we need to reconnect with our divinity. Since we are all at various levels of spirituality, people reach this understanding in their own unique ways. My spiritual understanding was transformed when I had my near-death experience, that is, when I was first brought in contact with my higher self, the divine part of me. I came to recognize that this divine part is connected with the flesh for only a short period of time, the time that we are here on earth. It's easier for me to live in the world knowing that divine part of me. Too often the flesh seems to be in conflict with the spirit rather than in unison with it. The flesh squelches and diminishes the spirit. During those periods when the transitory needs and desires of the flesh are being satisfied at the expense of the spirit, which may be much of our waking lives, I don't feel complete or serene. I believe that seeking a balance between body, mind, and spirit is essential. When I am in this balanced state, my spirit is no longer at the mercy of the body. The spirit can control the flesh, and it can raise temporal desires to a higher level. It is when we achieve that kind of balance that we function most creatively, spiritually, and naturally while we are here on earth. When I feel the separation or lack of balance between flesh and spirit, I need to enter a quiet place within myself and reflect on my spiritual needs. Everyone has a different way of reaching that quiet place. Some people get in touch with their inner self by using incense, music, or other aids. What works best for me is simply to allow myself to become very still, something I can do anywhere at any time. Then I contemplate the unseen spiritual part of me, and I allow that part to be the greater part, rather than tensing up and allowing the ego to dominate. When I release myself from the ego and allow the spirit to prevail, I am calm again. I return to a deep sense of peace and knowing that can be felt only when the spirit is in tune with God. To be able to understand this, I first needed to understand some greater truths. The most profound of these is an awareness of the existence of God, not just as an idea, but as a being, a spiritual father. The many religious faiths have different ways of experiencing God. Each person becomes aware of a sense of God's presence and the Spirit's divinity in his or her own way. I believe that caring for the Spirit is something that cannot be done just through rituals. When we are too deeply involved with rituals, we tend to become focused upon the rituals and not upon the Spirit. Being in tune with the divine self is something we should be aware of always. Of course, this is a process that has to be developed, but it can become as natural as breathing. We don't ask ourselves to breathe in, breathe out, it just happens. Through prayer and stillness, we can develop the same ability to be naturally in touch with the Spirit. In my own life, an important part of this process is expanding myself to the concepts of love. This openness encompasses not only love for other people, but the love of everything I see and appreciation for the beauty around me. When I awaken in the morning, I am thankful for a new day. I am thankful for everything that I have materially. I am thankful for everything I have spiritually. I thank God for allowing me to experience these things, even the experiences that may not seem so positive, such as developing an illness. I may not understand why I have the illness, but I sense that it is there for a purpose, and so I thank God for it. I ask Him to allow me to expand beyond my narrow-mindedness and self-centeredness so that I can see the good that comes from everything. The spirit is constantly being challenged. As we grow and become stronger, the spirit becomes stronger too. Then our challenges also become greater. We may see people facing one challenge upon the other, and we wonder how they can take one more thing. Yet these individuals continue to grow and expand. Their growth is enhanced by their willingness to take what appear to be negative events and turn them into something very positive. Our relationships with other people can also help us grow in spiritual understanding. I believe that the people we need come into our lives at the right time. These may be people with whom we connect deeply, such as spiritual sisters and brothers, who touch us and help us move on to even greater heights. There may also be people who, at the time, seemed not to be in tune with us at all, and who pass on out of our lives, an ex-spouse, for example, yet who may have acted as a bridge for us, enabling us to move from one level of awareness to another. Clergy, therapists, and counselors can also be a part of this network of spiritual sisters and brothers. So many people, when they are born into this physical world, were born into dysfunctional families, and they still see themselves as dysfunctional, as less than they are. Sometimes, to develop a clearer vision, we need someone else to lean on for a short period of time, someone who will help us see ourselves in a different light. It's important not to get stuck in the belief that only one person can touch and help us. I've always encouraged people who are in counseling to move on if they feel they are not progressing, because the right person, the one they need to be working with, is out there. It often seems easier not to move on. Even the muck and mire in which we're stuck seems less fearful and less challenging than the unknown path ahead. Some people use faith as a reason to remain stuck. They often say, "I have faith, so I'm waiting." But faith is not complacent. Faith is action. You don't have faith and wait. When you have faith, you move. Complacency actually shows a lack of faith. When it's time to move in a new direction in order to progress, the right people will come to us. We are responsible for one another, collectively so. The world is a joint effort. We might say it is like a giant puzzle, and each one of us is a very important and unique part of it. Collectively, we can unite and bring about a powerful change in the world. By working to raise our awareness to the highest possible level of spiritual understanding, we can begin to heal ourselves, then each other, and the world.
This book is continued on the other side of the cassette.